Thank you for listening to another great show on the Crawlspace Media Network. I'm Jared Ortiz, host of another show on the CSM Network, Even the Podcast is Afraid. And I wanted to tell you about the newest addition to the Crawlspace Media family with a trailer for my new show, Southern Oddities. The South is full of history, tales of the strange, creatures that defy logic, outlaws who took towns, and roadside curiosities that still attract visitors scratching their heads in wonder and confusion. Folk tales and stories are tradition in the southern United States, passed down from tradition to tradition, just like grandma's best Sunday brunch recipes. These tales helped create exaggerated mysteries, stories of legends, stories of our history, stories of the South. I'm Jared Ortiz. Most days I'm hosting and producing Even the Podcast is Afraid, a comedic true crime and paranormal podcast focusing on serial killers, demons, cults, and more macabre history. I have always been fascinated by the bizarre and the unnatural, those strange anomalies that one can create. As a Southerner, born and raised in Alabama, I decided it was time to share the tales of the people, places, and things that make up the unusual oddities of the South. On November 16th, the tales will begin with the premiere of Southern Oddities. Twice a week, I will bring you stories from all around the South of the interesting people, the unexplained places, and the mysterious artifacts that helped shape legends of the Deep South. Subscribe now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast listening app to listen to the show for free. Grab your sweet tea, gather around, and let's spin a yarn. Welcome to Southern Oddities.
You're listening to the Mind Over Murder podcast.
My name is Bill Thomas. I'm a writer, consulting producer, and now podcaster. I am now trying to use my experience as the brother of a murder victim to help other victims of violent crime. I'm working on a book on the unsolved Colonial Parkway murders, and I'm the co-administrator of the Colonial Parkway Murders Facebook group, together with Kristen Dilley.
My name is Kristen Dilley. I'm a writer, a researcher, a teacher, and a victim's advocate, as well as the social media manager and co-administrator for the Colonial Parkway Murders Facebook page with my partner in crime, Bill Thomas. Welcome to Mind Over Murder. I'm Kristen Dilley.
And I'm Bill Thomas.
We are continuing our coverage of the Breonna Maitland case with private investigations for the missing Lou Berry and Greg Overacker.
And next week, we'll be joined by Chloe Cantor of the True Crime Twins podcast. Yes, she's a twin. And she'll be telling us even more about the Breonna Maitland case. We're looking forward to that.
Thank you so much for the ratings and reviews you've been leaving for us on your preferred podcast platform. We do ask that if you haven't had a chance to give us a five-star review, please take a couple minutes out of your day and do so. It does help us grow our podcast and increase our audience.
So say nice things about us and we'll send you $5 or something. I don't know. Something. We'll try
to do your homework, or just do your homework because your teacher told you to.
Said the English teacher.
Yes.
We're thinking about creating Mind Over Murder t-shirts. For some reason, we've gotten stuck on certain expressions in addition to something that would say Mind Over Murder with a logo. So let us know if you like that idea. Also, several months ago when we were talking to Colleen Fitzpatrick, we started talking about in DNA testing circles, they refer to random man not excluded. And somehow Kristen and I thought that was just a great idea.
Just a good, funny little thing for a t-shirt. I think it's
a sort of a conversation piece.
Definitely.
And who knows, by next summer, we'll have cured coronavirus and heck, we might even be able to socialize and be able to see each other's t-shirts.
Over something other than Zoom or Google Hangouts or what have you.
You mean
I don't know about you.
Non-electronically?
I don't know about you, but I'm getting really sick of seeing myself through a Zoom camera.
Well, there is that. I would have to agree. And it's funny, reminder for our podcast audience, we do this podcast electronically because Kristen's in Virginia, Bill's in Connecticut, and so we're hundreds of miles apart. All those ideas we had about doing more podcasts face-to-face have been put on hold.
Not happening for a while.
Thanks so much for joining us, and we look forward to your ongoing participation, and let us know what you think of the t-shirt ideas.
Thanks for joining us. And we're back again with Lewis Berry and Greg Overacker. Can you guys walk us through the events of that day and help us separate what do we know from what is just speculation?
Well, I think just for a bit of background, Brianna had moved out of her home at some point in time and was living with friends, moving from place to place. She had dropped out of school, but had taken the GED. And that morning, she had gotten the results of the GED, found out that she passed the GED, and her mother went out for the day, I guess. They went out, had breakfast, went shopping, whatever. And at some point in time in the afternoon, they were at a store, and Brianna suddenly said, well, I got to go outside. And she left. And Kelly describes her on the way home as being agitated, brought her home, and Kelly dropped her off. And there's speculation, and it's entirely speculation that Brianna saw someone in the parking lot and went out there to meet them, and that she was warned, don't go to work. And they even at one point name a name of a person who told her this. And it's just all stories. There's no credibility to it whatsoever. Bruce feels that Brianna smoked cigarettes, and her mother didn't approve of that. Kelly didn't approve of her smoking, and that she'd been with her mother all morning and was probably dying for a cigarette and left, maybe went out and had a cigarette. And he said, number one, she was often agitated with her mother, and secondly, she had to get to work, and she had to drive back home and change and then, you know, drive to Montgomery. So, yeah, she was probably getting anxious.
And a 17-year-old girl annoyed with her mother. I've never heard of such a thing before.
Greg, you got anything that you can?
Well, just that, you know, when you talk to Bruce about Brianna wanting to leave, that he just felt like she, especially in retrospect, he felt that she was isolated on, you know, in the home that they had, living off the grid, kind of living off the grid, where they were, you know, a half mile back in the woods. And, you know, like any other kid, she wants to go out and do stuff with her friends every night. So she had a car, so she was off and running, and he said, I didn't want to. He goes, I figured she'd go out and buy, you know, she'd want money to buy clothes, money to fix her car. You know, eventually that stuff's all going to happen. The car's going to break down. There's going to have to be rent money. There's going to have to be, she's going to come back home. It's not going to last long. And then she'll realize and she'll be fine. But it just didn't happen that way. Right. Had time gone by, it probably would have.
She was excited about the GED. She passed. She went forward to go to UVM. I think it was UVM, which kind of takes away from the speculation that she was going to take off and run away.
Yeah, she wasn't some morose kid who...
No.
Yeah.
No. She wasn't depressed. She wasn't, you know, oh, I got to get out of here. Although, I mean, I think they all talked about that, you know, moving to the city where it's exciting and not, you know, not up here. But realistically, I think they're all still there. Every one of these kids in the group are all still up there for the most part.
And Burlington's what, all of an hour away?
Yeah, that's got to be a common thing where you want to get away from the constant fields and woods and isolation. But, you know, most of those kids probably would go away and then go, you know what, I'm a country girl and go back home. But that just never happened. You know?
Right. And even Burlington. I mean, Burlington, it's not New York City.
I got to tell you, you know, I go up there. And Burlington is just a quaint, a truly attractive town. It is. You could walk around that city all day shopping and stuff, and you got a beautiful view of the lake and, you know, almost anywhere you are. It seems like a dream come true.
I interviewed one of the girls up there who really wasn't involved in the case at all, but was involved with someone who's potentially involved in the case. She's never left Vermont, not even to go to New York, which is across the river. Never left Northern Vermont. Been there her entire life. And I don't think that's unusual. I don't think that's no clue as to what the outside world is like. You know?
That's a shame.
See on TV.
Kristen and I have both traveled for school and work. And of course, my dad was a naval officer, so we lived all over the country. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around this, but there are a lot of folks that have never gone anywhere.
I know people like that. They've never left here. Yeah.
It's I was on a Cape. There was a kid in town who had gotten a scholarship to play soccer at Brown. He got there, spent the night, got back on a bus and came home. Never been off the Cape. Hasn't been off since.
And it's not like Providence, Rhode Island is very far away or would feel completely alien to a kid from Massachusetts.
Well, it was to him.
I think that had to be absolutely just so frustrating for them when the police weren't jumping and clamoring at trying to help them. And they were just kind of like, well, she probably went to Boston. She'll be, that's actually what they said to her. She probably went to Boston. She'll be back in a few days. They're like, what the hell are you talking about? Our car's crashed into a building and the check, this paychecks are on the seat.
This doesn't make any sense.
It was absolutely, you know, what took place at that time was absolutely negligent. There's no doubt about it. Inept. Those people are all gone. You know, the police that are in there now do a good job, and they stay in touch with Bruce, and they work hard, and their hearts are in it and everything. But at the time, it was awful. And they just felt like they were trapped in a nightmare.
It does sound like the team that's in place now is doing a lot more to try to move Breonna Maitland's case forward.
Yeah, I think so. They have for years. You know, years ago, Glenn Hall was the one that was working it, and he's since retired. Bruce had a really good relationship with him. A couple others, too. I can't remember the names, but, you know, that stuff went away. Initially, it was difficult. At one point, they said to a newspaper that she was involved in the drug culture and this and that. And now Bruce goes, what are you assassinating my kid? You know, she's a kid.
Yeah.
You
know? And she's missing, by the way. And why are we trashing her?
Yeah. So that, you know, of course you get a retraction and it's in the back of the paper a week later or something like that. But that stuff all went away. And there really are some people in it who really have their best foot forward and are working really hard. So
unfortunately, what happens is, initially, the case is assigned to an investigator. They work on it, either do a good job or don't, without being case specific. And then they retire or they move on to get a promotion. Somebody else takes over. And over a period of time, now it's been 16 years, I've seen the files, and they'll fill up a file room. So a new investigator comes on, now has literally boxes and boxes and boxes of files just to get familiar with the case.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It took me probably 6 months to get comfortable with who was who.
Yeah.
You know, a name would come up, James Robitelli. Who was he now? Which one was he? You know,
Just sorting out all the players.
All the players. And
do you remember when we sat down together when we first met to go over it? And I
took
binders and I made us all the same binder. There was three of us and the other person dropped out, but I put it in front of him and I'm like, you ready?
And it goes in different directions. It's not all, okay, this is about this theory, this case, this person. It's like, oh, yeah. And then there's this group of people. And then there's Ramon Ryans and there's Legia Collins. Who's she? Well, that was his girlfriend. She was killed by Alan Ducharme and was doing time for murder. It was like, whoa. Slow down.
It was just, you know, if we sat here, if we came on your show and you said, okay, guys, explain to us start to beginning, it would take us weeks. We'd have to go through every aspect. There were so many offshoots of it, which is difficult, I know, for a listener to come on board. And it's kind of the thing where you have to watch a bunch of episodes about Breonna to try to get the whole scope.
Right.
Because
you're not going to get the whole scope.
Yeah. I mean the Alan Ducharme part of it is just absolutely bizarro. If you want to talk about that, we can. I can give it to you in a nutshell. It's up to you.
That could be another three episodes.
Well, let's go.
Remember the guy that's in prison now, the pig farmer from another part of Vermont down near Rutland, who wound up killing his son's fiance?
Yes. They found him with her. They found him with her
breast
in his pocket.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's the kind of sidetrack you get involved with.
I can't remember who turned us on to that, but then, you know, it's a weird thing where someone will say, okay, I got a tip for you. And you go, okay. And they tell you the story, but it's like, I heard Charles Manson killed some people. So
it must be related.
They amalgamate the two. And I'm like, wait a minute.
It is entertaining. This guy's defense was the reason his sperm was inside the corpse was because she had hugged him the day before.
Yeah.
I'm not real sure that's how it works.
Maybe in Vermont. I'm not down here.
His lawyer's shaking his head.
That was his defense. Of course it was there.
Yeah.
I mean, he probably didn't know what DNA is.
He's the guy that would shoot everybody in the neighborhood and then claim he was merely cleaning his gun that suddenly went off. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned in passing these two drug dealers who were in the area at the time, who are both, at least one of them has been sent up the river for trafficking, who may have been trying to entice young girls into sex trafficking. Is there any possibility that any of that would pan out and that they might have victimized someone like Brianna or other young girls? I mean, you know, Brianna was 17 at the time.
I think so. That was one of Hank's articles. He went on about that. One of the girls from Vermont that went, not with them, but with another guy down to New York City, ended up dying in a building down there. They just got her down there, wouldn't let her leave. But that came up, you know, and Brianna's friends will tell you that, oh, they'd offer to take his shop and they'd offer to take us down to New York with them. And the kids wanted to see stuff like they wanted to get out of that town and go to the city or something like that. So it was attractive to them.
They would use the girls also.
Yeah.
To smuggle back cocaine.
Yeah. You know,
they would hide the cocaine in a location where if they got stopped, the police would not search.
Mm-hmm. So some of that was happening. In other words, there was some high risk
by the girls. Again, we're talking about two African-American guys from New York City in northern Vermont.
Which is pretty white.
Someone goes missing. Guess who's going to get
blamed? Right.
Yeah, they stuck out like sore thumbs. I mean, right. It was bad. And they were brazen about what they did. Of course, that goes along with there's no police around hardly. And, you know, everything's under-policed probably. So they were in heaven up there. I mean, they had a pipeline coming up through there. They go down to Burlington or wherever, down into Massachusetts, bring their stuff up. They had money. They didn't have to work. They had stuff. You know, and cars, four-wheelers, girls. Girls love it.
By these exotic guys. You know?
Yeah. You know, so when she went missing, you know, all of a sudden the shit starts to hit the fan, and now everybody's eyeballing them. They did before, and now it's really bad. Now they think they actually did this. They disappear. Well, what happened is Ramon Ryans caught some charges off of it, but he ended up going down to Burlington, took off to Burlington, but Jackson disappeared. I think he went down the Carolinas or something.
Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah, but he ended up going to prison.
You know, I asked one of the girls, I said, well, what were you paying for coke back then? And she laughed. We didn't pay for coke.
Yeah. You know. They're getting us somehow.
Not with money.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say there are other valuable consideration opportunities. So were these two around at the time that Brianna Maitland went missing in March 2004?
Well, yeah. And that was part of the issue was that, you know, when they were talked to and stuff like that, they would deny knowing her or deny knowing her well. Jackson would say, yeah, I saw her a couple of times. I talked to her a couple of times, something like that. Just absolute utter bullshit. We had witnesses that said, well, even her brother Waylon saw them together in a car or no. Yeah. We had witnesses that the girl that she was living with, Jillian, witnessed them firsthand in their home together alone. I mean, they were together. He knew her. He's full of shit. And Ryan's knew her too and spent time with her. And we knew that. We knew they were lying.
So
it's got to be really frustrating trying to sort out all of this. What is fact? What is fiction? Yeah. You know, what road leads to where? It sounds like there's a lot of avenues and rabbit holes that you end up having to hop down, and some of which don't seem to pan out.
Most of which, all of which can't be verified, I guess.
I don't know what took place in their interviews and stuff like that, but I mean, it was pretty obvious that you could have lined up 20 people to say you're obviously lying. You know, these 20 people will verify the fact that you were with her for extended periods of time and alone. But they just knew if they kept their mouth shut, denied it. When Ryan's house was raided, he caught what? A gun charge?
No.
Wasn't it a gun charge?
No, drug charge. No, it's Vermont. You can own a gun. You don't need a permit.
I'm pretty sure he got a drug charge out of it, or a gun charge out of it.
A drug charge, no gun charge.
He ended up being on Vermont's one of their most wanted, and the marshals picked him up and brought him back for a court date. But again, he went in and talked to him. Part of his agreement was if he talked to the police, you know, they'd take that into consideration. He'd basically just walk every time. He'd go in, they'd talk to him, he'd go into court, they'd let him walk.
He made an agreement where he would take a polygraph.
Yeah, yeah.
They agreed upon credit for time served for this drug charge, waiting trial, if he took the polygraph. So he took it, and either it was inconclusive or he failed it. And they wanted to take a second test, and his attorney stepped in and said, deal was one test.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So yeah. That was the end of that.
End of agreement.
End of, yeah. They had to go by the agreement, and he was gone, credit for time served, back to New York City, Jamaica, New York, and he's still there.
And this guy, Jorge Soto from Springfield, Massachusetts, what's his story?
Jorge's name came up a lot, and they are satisfied that he was not involved. He was admittedly dealing drugs and made up the fact that he was responsible to scare people into paying their drug debt. And that was a common theme we heard over and over and over again. Right, Greg?
Yeah.
He'd been released from Springfield, Hampton County House of Correction, within days of her going missing. So he would have had to come up to Vermont somehow, find out where she was, where she worked, what she was doing, make arrangements, kill her, or do whatever, all within a very short period of time. It mm-hmm. seems extremely unlikely, and there's no motive.
Right.
As far as we know, she never knew him.
Mm-hmm.
There's no connection between her and him at all.
But he wasn't, you know, he wasn't associated with these other two ne'er-do-wells.
He probably was. I mean, I have a good source up there. Was heavily involved in the cocaine traffic at the time. Now is totally out of that. The source knew Soto and basically said, I have nothing to do with him. He's crazy. He's nuts. So they all knew each other. I mean, they're all involved in the drug trade. They all knew each other.
I mean, I know that the police talked to Soto fairly recently. You know, their kind of assessment of he's just a pipsqueak, you know. And that. Well, yeah, that might be so, but not back then. People feared him back then. And then he went into prison. He was in prison for a long time. Well, he went to prison for, I don't know how long he was in there. He went for 10 years. You come out of pipsqueak too. If you just, he was an absolute menace inside prison, and a menace. And he was in, I don't know if this, there was a, wasn't he in a facility that was for mental health patients at one time?
Probably. He was in just about every one they have.
I think he was in one in Massachusetts for quite a while for that. But either way, obviously, their assessment of it now is, and they kind of laugh that he's real diminutive now. That's fine. At the time, that was not the case. The kids feared him. Remember the story? I always laugh when I hear this. He hit the person over the head with a wrench?
The hammer.
The hammer.
Yeah, because he was in custody. So the guy sold his cocaine for him. And when he got out, he said, here, I sold your coke. Here's some money. And it was like, picked up a wrench, whacked him on the head, and said, how dare you touch my cocaine?
Yeah. The guy turned around to walk away. Hit him over the head.
He killed a puppy one time at a party.
Ooh, ow.
I mean, that was his reputation, you know, and so people feared him, and he fostered that.
Right. And he wanted people to be afraid of him.
He wanted people to be afraid of him.
He was just not a smart guy and stuff. You know, it's funny. I got his some kind of memorandum when they were arguing. When they were arguing the mitigating and aggravating circumstances for his sentencing, I think it was his lawyer told the story of either that or his like psychologist or whoever, psychiatrist, whatever, told the story when he lived in Puerto Rico. He actually was home one day and these men came to his home and dragged his mother out into the street and shot her in the head right in front of him. He was just a little boy.
Wow.
He was like 2.5, 3 years old.
Yeah.
When the police got there, he was sitting on top of her out in the street.
What a horrible thing to have.
Yeah, that's how his life started.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was anywhere near involved. I mean,
it was just
for him saying he was.
That didn't help.
What's that, Greg?
That didn't help that he would say he did.
Yeah, he'd mouth off all the time. You know?
Well, and this is not dissimilar to all the stories you heard from the Vermont kids, too, where there's always some version of what happened to poor Brianna. And they're on the periphery of this scary story.
Yeah.
You know, I actually had someone in prison that somebody came in and questioned Soto about Brianna. And he came back to his cell and he said, fuck them. I'm never going to tell them what happened, what I did to her kind of thing. So you didn't know. Oftentimes you were convinced that he had nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would say things like that. But right. You didn't know if he was saying things like that just to get arise out of his cellmate or right. whatever.
Or to look like a hard guy or whatever.
The hard guy. And, that's yeah. what he's, and he actually, at one point, if I'm not mistaken, got a commendation for saving a prisoner's life, another prisoner.
Did he really?
Yeah. I don't know, the guy attempted suicide and he, I remember the circumstance.
Right. The only place you can get accommodation for doing something you're supposed to do.
In jail, you know, a lot of places they sit down eating popcorn and watch. I mean, so is that a real hard guy?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I guess it's all situational.
Probably just a goof, you know, just not a good person.
You spent so much time now at this point on the case, both of you. Do you each have like a leading theory or a leading suspect? And if so, are they the same? Like, do you tend to share the same theory or is it different for both of you?
I have things that I believe to be true and not true, but none of it's very cohesive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, certain things that I think were true and not true. Lou mentioned a suicide note that was read by somebody and then she denied it. And other people said, I believe that that existed. I believe that she read it. I believe that, you know, she told a bunch of people that she read it.
And did that person that wrote the suicide note, did they confess to involvement in Brianna's disappearance?
In the note.
Oh, in the note. Yeah, in the note they did.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, is this person alive or dead?
Alive. And Blue interviewed him.
The problem is, if you believe that story, then there's about five others with credibility that you got to disregard.
Yeah.
Mm.
So it's like when you ask the question, which depends on the day.
Yeah.
Some days they say, you know what? I really think this is what happened. And then the next day it's like, or maybe this is what happened.
Yeah.
They're not related to each other. And it's
this. The more information you get, the more you change your mind and then you go back. And
at the beginning, I was convinced this has got to be a friend of hers. It's got to be someone she knows. It's got to be. And until I read an article in the newspaper that was written way back one of the first days that indicated that it read that it quoted the note that she had written the night that she disappeared.
This was to her roommate, right?
And if you read that note, she did not know when she was getting out of work.
And that's what the former owner of the Black Lantern Inn, the place where she worked as a dishwasher, said.
She would have no way of knowing. Could have been 10:30 at night, could have been 12:30 at night.
Depends on how many people had dinner that night.
Didn't know, right. So for someone who plot out, well, we're gonna get her on the way home from work, they might have been sitting there for a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see these people in her crowd having that kind of patience. Maybe I'm wrong. So that kind of took my focus away from her friends and everything. Now, don't forget, there, St. Albans is what, Greg, an hour from Montgomery?
It's not that far.
45 minutes at least.
Something like that, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, and she was living at least 15, 20 minutes outside of St. Albans.
Yeah.
And then it was another half hour to the Lantern. So
yeah,
not like this whole crowd was in Montgomery. There is no reason to go to Grant Montgomery.
Yeah, it's sparsely populated. Yeah.
And there's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah. There's a whole lot of
and the Black Lantern.
Yeah.
Well, this house, the Dutchburn house where the car was found abandoned, backed up and smashed into the old abandoned house, would that have been a place where she would have agreed to meet somebody? I mean,
oh, maybe pull over and maybe meet just for a few minutes. Yeah. But that's about it. They have a party there.
Oh, wow. We thought, oh, maybe that's a party spot. You know, it's right on the road. Asking her friends, and friends said, no, Dutchburn. Yeah, we know where it is, but it's significant. It's not
As you said, it's surrounded by open fields.
Yeah.
Right on the road, like literally 15 feet from the road.
So not a likely
go there
spot.
And do something illegal.
You're listening to Mind Over Murder. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsors. One of the most frequent questions we're asked here at Mind Over Murder is, how can I help?
Thanks to Othram, a leading forensic DNA testing lab for law enforcement, you can get involved and help solve real cases.
If you have tested at a consumer genetics company, you can contribute your data to DNASolves.com. The process is easy and confidential, just two simple steps. Your DNA might be the missing piece that helps solve the identity of an unknown person.
Then Mind Over Murder will highlight cases Othram is working on to seek your crowdfunding support for DNA testing to help solve these cold cases.
Upload your DNA profile to DNASolves.com. It's easy, free, and confidential.
Then join Mind Over Murder as we help families find answers with Othram and DNASolves.com. In these stressful times, everyone needs some time to chill out and relax. That's why we're excited to announce this week's sponsor, Boston Green Health.
Boston Green Health is a local provider of CBD products that specializes in oils, topicals, gummies, and edibles. Boston Green Health's plant-based products can provide natural relief and rest for the mind, body, and soul.
As one of New England's premier hemp-based companies, they offer a variety of all-natural CBD products that use a blend of locally sourced hemp extract.
Visit bostongreenhealth.com for premium CBD oil, a delicious variety of CBD-infused gummies, luxurious handcrafted topicals, and a product line for pets.
Mind Over Murder listeners can receive 20% off any purchase by using show code MOM20.
Boston Green Health takes pride in being New England's most trusted CBD brand.
Visit bostongreenhealth.com and use show code MOM20 for 20% off any purchase.
We're back here at Mind Over Murder. So it's not going to be a spot to stop and be romantic or make a drug deal.
I could see her pulling over and talking to somebody for a few minutes, maybe having a cigarette or something. But, you know, when I was a kid, we partied out. We were country all around here. We would drive up in a country road, pull up somebody we knew if we saw their car, whatever, get out, leave the car running because it was cold. It was March. Mm-hmm. Leave the car running, leave the heat on, turn the music up, yep. Roll your window down, stand outside and have a beer. You know, whatever, say, catch you later. Let's go over to Steve's house or whatever, jump into cars and take off. She could have met somebody there. That I had kind of thought that maybe she had pulled off across. If you pulled into this place, you would pull off. That's how they parked when the people lived there. She could have gone across the oncoming lane and just rolled off in front of the Dutchburn home. And if there was somebody there, she would pull up bumper to bumper with them.
Right.
So if something happened, a fight broke out, whatever, and she got in the car or was already in the car and wanted to get out of there, she would do a 3-point turn. Like, I would pull my ass up into the road because I'm an experienced driver and I would do that. She wouldn't. She would do the 3-point turn, hit the building, and then go the other way. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'd do the whole thing. I thought maybe, but it's kind of out of whack though, because right, Lou, it looks like she came from the road or from up farther rather than, it would be weird. She would be too far up the road for that to look right.
The way it appears, there's a slight curve in front of the Dutchburn home. So naturally, when you're going around a curve, you've got to turn the wheel. Tires turn. To me, it looks like she stopped, threw it in the reverse, and hit the gas. Now, if your car is making a turn, and you stop and hit the gas and go backwards, it's going to go back the other way. And that's exactly the way it went into the house.
If you look at the pictures, that wheel is really turned all the way. I mean, the wheels are like this. So it looks like she's panicked. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she starts backing up. And maybe that's her thought. That could be her thought. Well, I got to turn around and go the other way.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So if there is a fight or an assault or something like that.
Something blocking the road or who knows.
Mm-hmm. You know, her realizing all of a sudden, this isn't good.
I got to get out
reverse,
of here.
Hit the gas. Boom. She hits the building and she got hung up on a building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now keep in mind something, that she's tiny and that car is a boat. The car's like a rolling dumpster. It's huge.
Right.
And it's like driving two sofas around. You know what I mean? I actually owned one of those cars for a while. They're huge. The doors are like these huge, heavy wings that go off of them. You know, I had thought, so my thing about her pulling off and maybe she's bumper to bumper with somebody and they get arguing, or she's behind the wheel and they reach in and they're throttling her or whatever, and she guns it in reverse. Of course, she hits the house. She's turning the wheel, and that's the wheels you see turn so bad in the picture. I thought, so when I went down to New York and I did the show Disappeared, the producer had pictures that the police had given him that I had never seen. And I'm looking at these pictures, and I'm thinking, oh, the doors are shut. The doors are shut. So you're thinking, okay, if say she's outside the car and a fight breaks out, and she goes to get in the car and the person follows her and starts throttling her to pull her back out. She puts it in reverse. That door is going to mow them down.
Right.
It's a big door sticking out of there. It's just going to take them underneath the car.
This is assuming that they're behind the door.
Well, if they're trying to get her out, yeah. I mean, if that door's open and they're there trying to get her out, those big doors on a Cutlass, that's what it looks like. An old 88 looks like a Cutlass.
It's right. And it's a giant car, agreed.
Kind of thing. The doors are that size. It would literally just take them under. the window was open just a little bit, if I remember correctly. So then we find out that Robitelli closed the doors, that they were wide open.
This is supposedly when he passed by.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we don't know because they just towed the car away. Like what position the seat was in? Mm-hmm. Was it in, what gear was it in?
And there's a neck. There's a
battery dead or not.
There's a necklace that was on the ground outside the car, a broken necklace.
Kind of, I don't know. If that was always fuzzy. Like we weren't sure.
That was there. A trooper threw it back inside.
Yeah.
The first trooper.
Yeah,
was there migraine medicine or checks
in the car? Checks were
holding uncashed paychecks.
Takeout food.
Minimum paychecks. I mean, she'd only work two nights for a few hours each. So
right. We're not talking $1,000.
Yeah, that's the thing too. Is that not a ton of people were familiar with the fact that she was working there.
Right, and that brings me back to what I was saying in the beginning, where first, very few people knew where she was working, and secondly, nobody knew what time she was getting out. So that kind of took my focus away from that and put it back towards Montgomery, towards the Black Lantern. Was it someone down that end that was involved, not someone from her circle of friends up in Enosburg and St. Albans area?
Which could include a guest at the Black Lantern Inn. In other words, if she...
Yeah, I think they were all vetted by the state police.
Mm-hmm. There was one guy who was from out of town. I contacted him. They talked to him. He basically said... He was on vacation by himself. I'm like, who goes on vacation by themselves? He was a young guy, too. He was, you know, 30s or something. I'm like, this just seems goofy. He said, I had some friends lined up to go, and they didn't want to go, and I just wanted to, so I went. And okay. But they talked to him at length, but he was there alone. It was a really small place. I mean, it was you could eat in there. There was a little tiny bar, historic place.
For him to have been a guest there, he would have had to met her that night, unless he had been there the weekend before, which I don't believe. If he met her that night, when she left alone. So he would have had to somehow get in front of her, leave after her, get in front of her and stop her. And it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no plus one, it's a whole shit where you eat concept, too.
Yeah, and no one saw anyone leave after her. Whoever was there before she was at the either followed her or out of Montgomery or was waiting at the Dutch Burn House.
The most recent story we heard was that she was followed, and the story kind of makes a bit of sense and stuff like that. That's being looked into, but that's, yeah, it's...
Wait, followed by what sort of person?
People she knew.
You know, that's
the whole thing, though. The whole time frame thing is the part that kind of gets you, is that she leaves at 11:20, and her car is spotted by a reputable witness at 12:30. Okay?
So that's an hour and 10 minutes?
It's down the road.
Concrete, Greg, as we were led to believe.
The statement from, I know the guy's name, I don't want to say it, but
12:30 is not...
That's not concrete?
That's what I've been told relatively recently.
By how much?
It could have been up to 1:30.
Okay.
All right, so we may be stretching the window.
Nail this down to a time frame.
Right.
So my thought was that, okay, if it's 11:20 to, let's use a time just to, just an idea. So let's say it's 12:30 for her thing. In the scenario that she goes somewhere and comes back, goes somewhere and overdoses, goes somewhere and is killed, and they dump her car, she can only go so far. It would have to be, 35 minutes, right? Halfway, half the time, because it has to come back. But that's the absolute farthest she can go. So you can draw a circle around that.
Sometime at the scene too. So
the circle gets bigger as the time frame gets bigger, is how far the car could go and then come back. So we had one guy tell us,
and that would bring up is why. Why would you bring it back?
Right. Why would you bring it back and put it there in that fashion?
The further away you are, the less likely you're gonna be to drive her car all the way back to Montgomery and leave it there.
Right.
There's a million places in Vermont you could leave a car
and
not be found immediately. And the best places are wonderful.
For people that aren't familiar with Vermont, Vermont's 76% wooded. I mean, right, Lou? I mean, there's woods in those cities. You know, it's.
I don't know how much, but particularly at night, there's side roads, there's farm roads, there's gravel pits, there's quarries, there's a million places to dump a car that would not be found immediately, like it was at the Dutch Burn place.
There's an asbestos mine where no one would find a car for years. That's how you would time it. Okay, so that's the farthest it could go and then come back. But then a guy came along, and this guy always kind of gets Lou and I laughing, because a lot of what he said sounded really credible. And the guy told me that when he told me initially the story, I thought either this guy's telling me the truth or he's Stephen King. This guy it can tell a story, you know.
a good storyteller.
Expand on the story to the point where Lou is like, there's nobody left in town to include. He's got everybody involved, you know. But he answered kind of a weird question. What he said was that, yes, she was taken from that spot, but then she was taken somewhere else, and she was alive for another 3 days or 4 days or something like that.
Well, that's pretty chilling.
But that answered a couple of questions of the time frame of how the car can be there and other people could see her and stuff like that. One of the stories was that I think it was the same girl that we were talking about earlier that you interviewed there, that we interviewed together, that she walked in the door and said, and saw her at this third party's house and said, "What are you doing here? You were on the news tonight. Everybody's looking for you." You know, he tells this story. So he kind of answered some questions about if you're looking at the time frame and how it could be she'd be missing there.
But that too is BS, because it wasn't on the start on the news for
till Tuesday.
6 days.
No, it was on. Wait, she went missing on Friday. It was on Tuesday, wasn't it?
No, they went there Thursday.
Thursday.
Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So
yeah, his story just kind of got more and more convoluted. I think there's threads of truth to it. I think he was living up there at the time. I think there's some stuff that's true, but then he just built all this stuff around it, which you find with a lot of the statements that are given.
Well, some of the stuff, I think he embellished on rumors that he heard or started.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, as we said, we don't clear anybody. There could be some truth to it. Who knows?
Yeah.
But if you believe that, then there's about five other theories that you've got to disregard.
One of the other theories that seems to come up a lot is Brianna was attacked by another woman, the complicated love triangle. There may be more than three people. As you said, the relationships were pretty casual. There was a significant jealousy, and this woman attacked her. This idea that Brianna was only sucker punched or hit once or twice, I think is crazy, because when you look at the photographs of Brianna Maitland, this is supposed to be a few weeks before her disappearance. She looks like she's gone 10 rounds with Mike Tyson. I mean, she's got, I think, two black eyes and what looks like a broken nose. I mean, this woman wailed on her.
It's odd that you say that, because that girl in an interview said, "I know it looks that way." She said, "I only hit her twice." And that sounds absurd, but I got in a fight in high school one time and same thing happened. I hit a kid a few times and he looked like I killed him. I think it looks worse than it was, you know.
Two of the luckiest punches ever thrown. So
she was sitting in a truck, and the girl came up to the truck and punched her through the window a couple of times.
So is there any possibility that Brianna's disappearance is part of settling that score? Because apparently things were not that great after Brianna pressed charges, and there was a lot of unhappiness in that circle of friends. Is there any thought that this girl, and perhaps in league with others, did harm to Brianna?
It's possible, but in my mind, we're talking 15, 16-year-old girls.
No, maybe
they don't
seven. Maybe
kill somebody.
No, agreed.
I mean, 2 weeks later, an extreme measure. I don't buy it. It's possible again.
Well, you start mixing in some of these dim-witted boyfriends, and if they listen to this podcast, I stand by what I said. Dim-witted boyfriends. If you mix some of them into this...
Well, the dim-witted boyfriends you're talking about, I don't think have enough ambition to kill someone.
Boy, they're not going to be real happy at this characterization, are they?
Well, keeping in mind, as somebody who works with high school kids on the regular, I can't think of terribly many kids, dim-witted or smart, who would have the ambition to try to kill somebody who ticked them off.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, you hate to discount anything. And again, it could have been a combination of an intentional assault and an accidental death.
I think it's possible, yeah.
Greg does, yeah.
Yeah.
So given all of this information, and it just seems like there are rabbit holes for days and leads and non-leads, how do you see this case being solved? What ultimately is going to break this for you guys?
I don't have an answer for that.
If we knew where the answer was, we'd find it. And we'd
get it. Sure, yeah.
The thing is, yeah, I don't want to say you haven't heard the half of it, but you haven't heard the half of it. There's other avenues that are being pursued that are totally unrelated to any of this, that have as much credibility as anything. So, yeah, what we've gone over, I think, is crazy, but
Tip of the iceberg.
It gets crazier, you know, and we may not have the answer yet. I mean, the answer is out there, but, you know, we always say, how do you solve a case? These cases, DNA.
Right.
You know? Usually you get that from the crime scene. In this case, unfortunately, the crime scene was compromised.
Although, to be fair, our friends at Othram Labs in Texas are now conducting advanced forensic testing on DNA evidence provided to them by the Vermont State Police investigators.
Which is great.
Yeah. So
it's fantastic. And hopefully they'll identify it, and hopefully it'll tie into the homicide or to the missing person.
I just keep trying to, when things slow down, let's do something. I used to drive Bruce crazy with that. Years ago, I'd be like, I'm going, I'll go next weekend, make me a list. And that's kind of the way we would do it, just to keep things moving along. Because if you didn't, we're not getting any closer.
And that's why things like this are great, because it keeps things moving. 3-4 years ago, your average person outside of Northern Vermont did not hear of Breanna Maitland, had no idea who Breanna Maitland was.
Right, right.
Now her name is out there, and people all over the country are familiar with it. And the only way to solve this case is through DNA, which, keep our fingers crossed, a confession, which someone would have to already be incarcerated and probably on death row to confess, unless it was an accidental death, or find religion or something, or a witness. So if it was done without a witness and there's no DNA, chances of solving the case are pretty damn small. If you don't try, you'll never solve it.
As we talked about in the last episode, our friends at Crawl Space have done a significant amount of coverage, and our friends Billy Jensen and Paul Holes just covered this case on their podcast as well.
The Murder Squad.
I actually wanted to thank Billy and Paul because we were looking to raise $5,000 to help cover the costs of the DNA testing being conducted by Othram. With the help of our listeners, we'd gotten to $2,500, and Crawl Space was promoting it and so on. Billy and Paul have had some success in the last couple of years, and they offered to provide the additional $2,500 to get us to $5,000. So the tests are proceeding, and we hope to have results sometime later on this year, this calendar year. As you said, Louie, the DNA options can be a game changer if they're helpful in identifying potential suspects or giving you a clear idea of what might have happened that night.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do know that there's been a number of people up in Northern Vermont that have authorized Othram to use their DNA through GED or Ancestry or whatever to hopefully, you know, through a familial DNA match, find out. I mean, there's people up there. Everybody's related up there, it seems. You know. I mean, seriously, you talk to somebody who's like, oh, yeah, it's my cousin.
My cousin. Yeah, man. That means we only need a certain percentage to get into the DNA Solves and GEDmatch DNA databases, and we'll be able to figure out who a particular person might be.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story. I guess it's really not a funny story, but a story. We wanted to start a case for private investigations for the missing to get some notoriety for the nonprofit, because we really, what we need is funding. They need funding. They need
right.
a grant. They need a donor. They need somebody to fund this thing. And so Greg poked around and came up with this case. And we agreed we're going to stay out of Vermont. We don't want to do another Vermont case because we bothered those people enough up there. So Greg comes up with this Erica Franowich case. And she's been missing for 30 years out in the wilderness of New York State, right? So he calls me up one day. He says, "Lou, you're not going to believe this." He said, "The suspect in this case moved to Northern Vermont." And I said, "Oh, okay." So I did some checking. I called him up the next day. He said, "Greg, you may not believe this, but the suspect's son dated Brianna's best friend."
What are the chances that your two missing persons cases and potential homicides miles apart?
Greg has almost exclusively worked the New York case because he's up there and he's done a hell of a job on the case. And he's, through that case, developed sources in Vermont on Brianna's case.
Yeah.
Because they're related. I mean, not, the court cases aren't related, or maybe they are, but we don't think they are. But the people are all related.
Yeah.
He's gotten some good information from people involved in the New York case that relate back to Brianna.
I was talking to one girl, and she said, you know, and it was to do with Franelik. And she said, "I know Brianna Maitland. She used to come to my house."
Wow.
My son knew her really well. And she gave me very, very good, valid tip that actually was worked on recently.
And this is someone you knew through the Erica Franowich case.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't believe in, I'm not religious. I don't believe in any of that stuff. I don't believe in not even a little. But I said, how can this be coincidental that one is leading us to the other?
I don't know.
That just seemed very eerie to me that one may solve the other.
The son of the missing person dated Brianna's best friend. Went to high school with Brianna. He committed suicide.
Oh, yeah. Very sad.
Wow.
Yeah, it is a very, very sad case. I mean, all of a sudden it was just like the two cases just merged and not merged, but collided, I guess is a better word
for it. Yeah. Yeah. How, what a wild story.
Yeah. Crazy. The coincidence there.
Believe it or not, we've run out of time. We wanted to thank both of you for taking some time to talk to us about the Breonna Maitland disappearance and now a bit about the Erica Franowich case as well. We really appreciate what you're doing, and we want to give a shout out to Private Investigations for the Missing. If you want more information, if you go to investigationsforthemissing.org, that'll take you there. And so if someone wanted to contact you, Lou, or you, Greg, do they do that through Private Investigations for the Missing?
They can.
That would probably be the best way,
My phone number is listed on the YouTube versions of Crawl Space, I think. If not, you guys can put it on there.
Oh, fantastic.
It's on Brianna's page. There's contact information, email, phone number. You can always get us through Tim and Lance at Crawl Space, or I'm sure through you.
There's a lot of interesting stuff on that website. Yeah.
Well, we'll include all those links in our show notes, and we'll look forward to talking with you guys again if you're up for it.
Just a note for your listeners, Greg loves to hear from psychics.
Yeah. Thanks, Lou. I'll be spending that off for a month.
Anytime if a psychic out there has the least little, you know, if they think she's near woods, call them up and let them know.
Right. What about water?
There it is. She's in the woods near water.
I see trees.
I got to tell you before you go, so years ago, I had a computer in my room and I had a nice corner desk up there and I had like snacks and I had my water and I had to call this woman who was a psychic and she wanted to talk to me and I called her and I'm like, I'm in for the haul because I know she's going to want to talk.
Wait, you had to use a phone? You couldn't just, you know.
Yeah, she couldn't just mentally tell me. So the husband gets on the phone. And he says, she's going to channel and she's going to tell me what to tell you. And I go, he explains it to me that
Kristen's starting to make snorting sounds.
She's like a beacon in the night. She's like this light, this beacon in the night. And these people who have been harmed come to her and tell her what happened and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I've got a pad next to me and he's telling me, I can hear her. She's mumbling. He said, she's sitting on the floor. It exhausts her. She's sitting on the floor and she's telling me these things and she'll say something and then he'll say, she's in the woods. And then she'll talk again and he'll go, she's near water. But it just went on for like an hour and a half. I'm writing the words down that he's saying to me. I'm writing these little 3 or 4 word phrases he's saying to me. I've got pages and pages and pages of them. And we got done with the call and everything. I'm looking at these like 4 or 5 pages of shit. And I'm like, this is worthless. This is absolutely worthless. There's nothing here. It just says, saw a garbage can, 2 men near a tree. Never get that hour and a half back.
All I can say is it's a good thing you had snacks.
Oh my God. I literally called Bruce up the next day and he goes, hello. And I go, never again. Are you okay? So, I'm like,
But Lou said, as part of your willingness to take one for the team, you take the calls from the psychics.
Yeah. Oh my God. You know what? I told Crawlspace I wanted to find a way to raise money for the organization.
Absolutely.
I said, if you can put the asses in the seats, you put a psychic across from me. I said, we'll go toe to toe and they won't last. No one stepped up. They put the offer out. No one has stepped up yet. Give him some kind of reward. If you can beat Greg, the psychic, we'll give you $500, you know. Yeah, it just drives me absolutely batshit. And the number of people that believe it. And I can't believe that I actually have to try to tell people to tell another human being that people aren't magic.
He now says,
you literally have to
tell me what the lottery number is going to win tomorrow night. I don't want to talk to you.
Right.
I've never had somebody come up to me and go, you know, I went to high school with a kid that could levitate. Really? Oh, yeah, the whole school used to watch him. I never saw it on the news. Well, he kept it.
Whoa. I went to college with some people that thought they could levitate. And in their mind, they were levitating.
Yes. And it's the whole, I get into these conversations with people. And it's like, when you talk to people about ghosts, they say, well, my grandmother, it's always that. It's my grandmother saw a ghost one time, came down the stairs, and they think it lived in the house and all this other shit. I'm like, okay, but you didn't actually see it. No, or whatever. But when I ask people if they believe in ghosts, people will say yes. Yeah. So I always say, okay, you believe in ghosts. They go, yeah. And I go, all right.
Okay. Yeah.
So do you believe in fairies? And they'll go, well, no. And I'll go, do you believe in leprechauns? And they'll go, no, oh, that's ridiculous. And I'll go, I'm sorry, it's ridiculous. I just don't know where your cutoff point is. Exactly. Where do you draw the line between goblins and fairies and ghosts? I don't know. You know,
as an Irishman, I have to defend the leprechauns.
But they'll look at you and go, that's ridiculous. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm being ridiculous. You know,
well, next time we're going to talk about psychics.
Yes.
And your both of your experiences with psychics and how helpful they've been to you in your various investigations.
Oh, I would love to.
You know, you get a whole percentage of people that call, like with psychics, or we had one from Russia. The guy had a machine invented and he could track people with this machine. And he gave me an address and told me where Brianna was located in Russia. I mean, it's just.
Who was the guy that did the. Remember the guy that. Didn't he have some mathematical equation? Was that what it was? Or but he was full of shit, obviously.
don't pull your punches.
Legitimate. I mean, this guy's a social worker. I checked him out. He's legitimate. And he was coming back from somewhere. And
that's what it was.
Yeah, and he had a vision. And he went through the whole litany of everything. And it was her two older brothers were. I said, time out. She didn't have two older brothers. Everything he told me was wrong.
Right.
Yeah. Everything he told me was wrong.
Yeah, there's like 20.
Could have been further off.
Every one of them was wrong.
He didn't have one piece of accurate information.
Lou writes him back and goes, you're not even close. You're not even in the ballpark.
Said, oh, sorry.
All right. We know what we're going to talk about next time. Well,
you know, I heard a cop talking about, I don't want to say who it was and everything, but it was to do with Maura Murray's case, and it was another podcast. And he started out the thing by saying he didn't believe in psychics, but his boss made him work with a psychic, and everything that came from her, it was the whole show, and that he believed it and all this stuff that he told you all about it and blah, blah, blah. Lou, what do they call that when evidence comes from something faulty? Well, I shouldn't say that. There's the fruit of this poisonous tree.
Fruit of the poisonous tree, right.
That's illegal.
But
this was kind of in that concept, in that vein of you started with a psychic. Therefore, everything below that is bullshit.
Faulty premise.
Certain things, if there's a 50-50 shot, you've got a half a chance of being right. But other than that, it's just bullshit, derived from bullshit. So,
well, the prosecutors hate psychic involvement for just that reason. Because that's prosecutors. Because if they finally get a case, you know, and they say, oh, you know, we got a call from, it's in a report, Greg Overhead, a psychic called up and said,
God, yeah.
Well, did you check into that? You know, it complicates the prosecution.
Yeah.
Immensely.
Thank you both, and we'll talk again if it's okay.
Yeah, thank you so much. That was great. Good to meet you both.
Nice to meet you.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
Mind Over Murder is a production of Absolute Zero and Another Dog Productions.
Our executive producers are Bill Thomas and Kristen Dilley.
Our logo art is by Pamela Arnois.
Our theme music is by Kevin MacLeod.
Mind Over Murder is distributed in partnership with Crawl Space Media.
You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.
You can also follow our page on the Colonial Parkway Murders on Facebook.
And finally, you can follow Bill Thomas on Twitter at BillThomas56.
Thank you for listening to Mind Over Murder.